Overdrive. It is Wednesday, day after Valentine's Day, my favorite time of the year. Thank you so much for all the flowers you sent my yesterday to my office.
Right on. That did not happen.
Love it's in the air. Rumors. It's V-Day, and I decided to wear pink just to say hello to all my friends. Happy Valentine's to everybody. I know it's a belated Valentine's Day, but there's love in the room because we were talking about making money, and who doesn't love that? Flipping today, 2017, and it's the right market to come back if you've been flipping or you've been rehabbing. And we're here to give you the do's and don'ts. And to do that, of course, we got to align ourselves with the expert. We have Vince Melito in the studio.
Carla, Nick, how are you guys doing today?
I'm good, man. Happy Heart Day. Happy belated Heart Day.
Oh, it's not a real holiday, guys. Yeah.
Do you have a heart?
I so agree with you.
It's
if
a
you
Hallmark.
Gotta tell me when I gotta love somebody, we got a problem.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not about who's gonna tell you when. It's how, because God knows you don't have a heart.
I don't let corporate America tell me when to say I love you to my significant other. I say it every day.
I heart you, Patty.
I heart you. It is a high-pressure holiday, though. So
I don't buy into it.
I do agree,
nope.
Yes.
Nope.
Yeah.
I love it. It's a great reminder to say, you know, tell the people that you love.
That's true.
Happy Valentine's Day. We heart you. So anyway, Nick, we got a great show today. Everybody is dying to hear about our secrets, right? I think in the room, everybody has had their hands on a flip. And we're currently in the process of transacting and flipping in 2017. So we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts? Let's open up the conversation with, you know, what are your, I don't know, what is your biggest, I mean, how do you start a flip, Vince?
Well, the one thing that you need to make sure you're doing when you're looking to flip a property is, first and foremost, you're making your money when you first buy the flip.
Absolutely.
Everyone goes into the flip thinking, yeah, I'm going to buy this property and I'm going to improve it and then I'm going to make my money when I sell the property. Not true.
Right.
You're making your money when you buy it, because if you don't buy the property right from the get-go, you're going to blow yourself up through the deal on the back end, and then when you go to sell it, you could very much lose
there's no the way
money
out.
You thought
there
you were
really
going to make.
No
That's
way
right.
out if you overbought it.
You can't sell your way out of the deal. That's the bottom line. So you got to buy it right on the front end. So with that knowledge going in, you've got to make sure you get it right. And if you don't, you've got to make it a very unemotional process. Walk away. Go find the next one. But you got to make sure you're buying it right when you're first finding a deal.
Yeah, it's that infamous saying. I think we used to say it a lot back in when we first started the show. It's always about buying low, selling high. And you can't lose the principle of that. Some people have started to, you know, as the flipping phenomenon gains some steam, people give a lot of leeway to the market and the future of the market. And they're buying a little bit higher than they should, because they're essentially thinking that things are just going to keep getting better. It's not buy high and sell higher. It's buy low and sell high. That's the
exactly.
mentality that a lot of people have forgotten.
Right, and I think acquisition cost is the most important, right? Because even if you fail at gauging the numbers for rehab or what's it going to take you to get the property off the market, that's a cost you're going to incur, right? Because you're keeping the lights on, water bill that you're going to incur. And if you're, you know, financing this investment, that's interest rates that you're going to pay to your, you know, hard money lender or the lender that's lending you the money. So you can get that wrong, but you can leverage that if you get a low acquisition. So aside from that, I mean, what is the next steps? I think the secrets that we want to share with our audience and I'm sure that everybody wants to know, because what everybody's saying out there is, where do we find this inventory? That's the biggest secret. I mean, if we can break that now, because we understand that residential or just people who are going to own or occupy, they're having a hard time finding property. But what about the people who want to flip? What do you recommend?
Yeah, let's go round table on that. Everyone's got something, I'm sure. So we'll start with Vince, obviously, because you're pretty prolific at doing this. So
I'll give you a couple different ideas, and I'll just give you a real simple one that worked for me in the past, and it's not go to the MLS. Although you can definitely find deals on the MLS through your broker. So if you've got a broker you really like, let them go find some deals for you. A little harder to find during the spring market, but they're definitely out there later in the year. If there's a neighborhood that you really like, and I suggest you try to stay close to home when you're talking about flipping. Make sure you know the area inside and out. But one thing I used to do, it was very successful for me, is drive the areas that you like, and if you see a home that's in disrepair or they're not cutting lawn or doing something like that, it's kind of an old school idea. It works. There's a good chance that this person is struggling financially, struggling to keep up with the house, struggling to keep up with the bills. Some of the deferred maintenance is starting to get
tired.
To them. And they're practically waiting for you to come there and solve their problem.
Yeah.
You know, you got to look at yourself as a problem solver. So when you're approaching somebody like that in that situation, you're there to help them solve their problem. You're not there, hey, I want to buy your house so I can make some money. No, don't make it about you. Make sure you make it about them. And you can find yourself in a win-win situation and picking yourself up a house at the right price.
Love it. You got to walk the streets. I mean, are you too good to walk the streets now, Nick?
No, I'm lazy, but I'm not too good. I'll drive the streets. I'm going to throw one more into the ring here. Coming on the heels of, what was it, a couple weeks ago, we had one of your guests, one of your invited guests, an attorney. Attorneys that deal with foreclosures and short sales and oftentimes have, that's another place that you can go to. They oftentimes have clients that need to get out of a property, if you will, and are in need of a buyer of a bad situation. So they seem to do a good job of pairing people up. If you're a buyer, they have sellers. It works. It's a win-win for him. That's another source, in my opinion.
Great.
I agree.
Patty, what do you got?
Well, I do have a question, actually. I come in at the other end of this. I come at the outside end of it when mm-hmm. we're fixing the property.
You're on the finished product.
Exactly. So I'm a layperson when it comes to purchasing these products. So, you know, Nick, you had mentioned attorneys. Is it always financial distress, or is it sometimes a divorce, let's say, or an estate?
No,
I love how she asks questions because she knows what she's asking.
She's 100% right.
She's setting it up for you.
An attorney that deals with real estate in general. I mean, you can't have enough of them. In my opinion, you can't have enough people outside of an agent working for you, looking for you. I mean, an agent will have, you know, one agent is all you really need to build the system out and give you a daily report of any new short sale that comes within a certain area. They could do that from a computer programming standpoint, and then you're going to get your streamlined info. But like Vince said, that's sometimes just not the best way of doing it. It works. You can always hit gold once in a while. But you got to – flipping's become tougher and tougher. There's a lot more people doing it ever since, let's say, the dawn of all these shows, Flip This House and, you know, How to Make Money in Rehabbing. And there's a lot of stuff out there. Outside of us doing a show, there's a lot of TV shows as well. So
well, the key is that when people see it and it's so easy on HGTV, right, is the HGTV mentality. Everybody wants to do it. And, yeah. Of course, the market is great. Pricing is up. So it's easy to sell properties. When you're selling properties, everyone wants to get into it. But when 2010, 2011, 2012, no one was, you know, selling properties. There wasn't an after repair value. There wasn't anybody buying things that were repaired. So I think a lot of people missed the boat. But if you want to know the secrets, and that's why I love this platform, and that's why I encourage you guys to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Facebook, well, obviously Facebook Live, but also www.marketoverdrive.com, because we're giving you information. And I think here in the studio, we just named three amazing, really key ideas as to, you know, you said walk the streets. I do that all the time. I have my whole team that passes out flyers and says, we have a buyer for you. Seriously, I came across a property and I left a note for someone, and it was an estate. The mom was moving into a home because she, you know, she was getting older in age, and it was easy. We bought the property for our investors and they flipped it. They put in a $1 million home there. And this is in the Budlong Woods area. And I think you had a two flat out there too that you were looking into, right? I mean,
and where?
Budlong Woods, north of Lincoln Square.
I mean, yeah.
You were trying to sell it as Lincoln Square, but it wasn't.
I don't remember that, but, you know. I mean, going back to what just kind of to wrap up before Carla went on her little spiel.
Wait, I have the other one. You didn't ask me for mine.
Well, we weren't done with Patty's still.
Okay, whatever. Go ahead.
You said a very good point. I mentioned distress attorneys that deal with distressed properties or any real estate attorney, but estate sales, oftentimes, there's I'm currently in the middle of a probate refinance, if you will, where there's siblings going after the one house, mm-hmm. and one person has lived there, one of the siblings. What I've seen in the few probates and estate sales is that everyone has been so distant from whoever, you know, passed away, they just kind of want to wrap this up. And there's always nice discounts, typically, in those properties, assuming it's what I'll call an average home, not like some penthouse in the middle of the Gold Coast or downtown Manhattan. Those, everyone kind of knows what they got there, so they'll go after top dollar, usually.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, if you're talking about some modest neighborhoods, there's this temperament amongst everybody that is in kind of finalizing everything, getting their checks, if you will, and I've seen a lot of great deals happen, whether it's between the siblings or just out to the free market. So probate attorneys, estate attorneys, of course, distressed property attorneys,
foreclosure defense attorneys.
All these attorneys are a very good outlet to, if you're a real buyer and you're really going to take action. You might lose those contacts if you're always brushing off every opportunity, or you're kicking tires all day long. But those are definitely good sources.
That's why we have this show, right? Because we want to do the network aspect of it. We want to encourage you to align yourself with the experts, work with the group of realtors. Obviously, my team is someone that's very aggressively seeking these opportunities all the time for our clients. And like I said, leaving notes on the doors for properties that look distressed. But like you said, Nick, for closure defense attorneys, estate attorneys, and we have Mario Correa that comes on the show or was with us, and that's a good contact as well. And like my one bit is obviously you can go to the websites like Hubzu, homepath.com, auction.com.
And
yeah. These are very good outlets because I found that a lot of our investor clients are going to these sources for their properties. And of course, again and again, you have to align yourself with realtors who are out there and understand how to, you know, give you the acquisition cost and let you know, don't pay any more than this. And then also, if you repaired it, what is the most that you could likely get for this property? And I don't like to say the most you can get. I like to say conservatively, what would be the worst case scenario so that you can work your numbers that way, versus being so aggressive about what you expect for the market.
Yeah, you don't want to be over-optimistic because at that point, if you fall short, it's costly. I mean, that could have been your entire profit spread.
Oh, for sure.
And before we get into some more hows and don'ts, do's and don'ts, if you will, what would you say, Vince, is the general typical margin just to kind of limit everyone's expectation? Now, don't get me wrong. There's some times when you find the right property and you literally made 100% margin.
Yeah.
100% of what you invested in it. But what would you, kind of looking back at all the ones you've done, where do you think is that realistic area that you should walk away and say, okay, that was worth it, that was what I kind of expected, 20% profit margin, 30% profit margin? I mean, what are you typically seeing?
Yeah, realistically, on a flip, 15 to 18% is a very realistic number to go for.
Net profit margin.
Right. The reality is that once you're done with all of your, you know, your acquisition fees, your lending fees and everything else, if you're able to make that kind of return on your money, you're in pretty good shape. Also, you might want to just look at the deals individually, right? If it's a little bit of a higher end deal, you might be able to take a little a smaller percentage return because there's so much more money to be made. Whereas if you're on, say, a lower end home where you're picking it up for maybe 150 and you need to put 30 into it and you're at 180 and you think you can only sell it for, you know, 205 or 210, well, by the time you're done with your expenses and this and that, and if you end up getting 10 grand less than you thought, there's no money left.
Yeah.
You know, where on paper it might look like a 15% margin. You know, so you want to be careful. You can, you know, so if it's a lower priced property, tend to look for a bigger margin. If it's a higher priced property, you can probably get away, as long as you know the area and you're comfortable, with a slightly smaller margin base. So if I'm doing a flip and my back end sellout fee or sellout price, let's say I estimate the sell price at around $600,000. On a deal like that, when it's all said and done, you know, I want to net at least $60,000,
right,
if not $75,000. You know, so that's that's my conservative low end number. So that only puts me around 10-12%.
Right.
But I've got to feel very comfortable that that's my conservative number. Now, if I hit my high end on that deal, I'm going to make maybe 90 to 100 on that flip.
I like what I said, and I want to question that because this is the second time I hear it. So the lower the acquisition, so if it's a small purchase, the higher the return versus if you're buying something big and you're doing a more expensive flip?
On a percentage basis, yes.
Yeah. This is the second time that I've heard that.
Yeah, because if I've got a $600,000 property and I think my conservative number is 75 and I miss it by 20,000 or 25,
right,
at least I'm still walking away at 50 grand.
Yeah,
but if I'm only estimating 30,000 or 25,000 on a small flip, I like those types of flips, you know, quick 25 on a low risk flip. Those smaller properties are still lower risk. There's still less risk involved in the deal.
Right.
So you might make 25 grand. But now, if the market starts to go a little soft on you, those areas tend to go soft a little quicker. Now maybe you're taking 10 or 15. You might be doing all this work for $10,000. that could disappear on you very quick.
That's just like a hobby. Why would you even want to invest the time in?
Now it's a hobby.
And I want to go back to where you said initially, you said that you want to work in an area that is close to you. And now that, does that mean proximity because you live in that neighborhood? I know one of our co-hosts here, Graco, likes to do the United Center area because that's where he lives. That's where he's seen the growth, right? He claims that he was the original developer.
The pioneer. Oh, God.
So we have to hear that all the time about how amazing he is with like understanding a neighborhood and knowing which is the next up and coming spot. But what do you mean by that? Like, do you, that you have to live close? Is that because you're going to be managing that rehab there?
You know, you actually said it best just in the way you posed the question to me is Graco went to this area.
I like him. He's always complimenting me.
Yeah. Well, it's because my opinion of you is so high. You know, like Graco said to you in the conversation, he goes, I really like this area because I live here and I know it really well. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to live there to know it really well, but know it really well. Don't get out of your comfort zone. Don't start messing around in an area and say, oh, I'm so good at flipping that I can go into this area. I'm not really sure of the market, but, you know, I'm going to kind of step away from that a little bit. I don't like doing that, especially when you're first getting started out.
But Vince, what do you say to someone that, I'm sorry, Nick, what do you say to someone that, I mean, there is no inventory. So at this point, I'm kind of open to wherever there's a good opportunity.
Well, then make sure you're working with somebody who knows the area. It's got to be a realtor who knows it inside and out, who you trust, but who's not going to, go ahead, Nick.
I'm sorry, but that attitude, what you just said, is a very good question, but it's also reaching. You never want to be in a situation where you're reaching in the flipping game. Comfort is probably the most important word in the entire concept of flipping. Are you comfortable in what you're going to do? If there's an ounce of uncomfort, meaning that this could really blow up, you're probably answering your own question. You should walk away. Now, we have different tolerance of comfort. You said you're typically doing them at between 10 to 18% net margin. That is the sign of what I would consider a more prolific flipper than myself. I don't flip as many homes as you probably have. I've done them. I personally, to keep me comfortable, don't like going into something that I don't think I'm going to get at least a 25% margin on.
But do you?
That's my personal thing.
So you're talking about financial comfort. We're talking about location comfort.
Well, that's, again, just comfort in the whole deal. Are you comfortable because it's around a corner from your house? Are you comfortable because maybe it's 5 miles away or 15 miles away, but you know the profit margin is going to be really high at the
Instead
end of it
Instead of comfort,
all.
I want to turn that and call it leverage. I think you want to leverage your knowledge about the location.
Those are two totally different definitions of two different
things.
No,
it's not.
Leverage and comforts are different words that have different meanings. You cannot...
Okay, well, you went back and said that it was wrong for me to say that because there is no inventory, you should look at all the different options, all the different neighborhoods, as long as you understand the acquisition cost versus after repair value.
I just said you don't want to be desperate.
You're not desperate. Yeah. You're finding a deal.
You can find a deal anywhere, but you can be comfortable doing a deal 40 miles away from your house if it's the right deal.
Yeah, the numbers are there.
It goes
back
to
you're
comfortable with it. But if you're in a situation where, like for me, I could never go into a $600,000 personally. Now, it sounds like you have and you're succeeding with it.
But then that's risk assessment.
But it's just I could never go into a $600,000 deal saying I'm going to make $60,000 because if something goes wrong— That's
right.
a whole lot of money to
Investment.
Put out there.
Let me run those
for
numbers
me,
for you.
For me personally.
Run those numbers for you and how they might look real quick just so you kind of get an idea of what I'm talking about because it's spread margin, okay? So let's just say I have a house and I pick it up for this. I'm going to give you an example of a house I'm working on right now. It's 419 North Washington in Park Ridge. I'm finishing up the construction. I'm going to be on the market in a week.
There's a plug.
All right.
Visit 419.com.
acquisition cost on a property –
Real numbers?
Property
You're going to share real numbers?
$360,000, mm-hmm. okay? Now, by the time it's all said and done, I will have $163,000 into the cost of the rehab, mm-hmm. okay? Now, that is over budget. We went over budget on this one by a good, $20,000, all right?
So it sounds like you're at 520 right now? Is that
So we're at approximately 525.25.
Okay.
All right. Now, I think the final sales price on this, where we're going to list it at 650, and we think we're going to do pretty well and get reasonably close to that. So when you hear those numbers, it sounds like a large margin.
Sounds like a lot of 20%
money.
20%
there. Right? Okay. But it's not.
Right.
Because you have to factor in now your sell costs and some of your holding costs and things like that. And you need to factor those numbers out. It's another like 9, to 10% off of that number. So when I'm all said and done, there's going to be, maybe another, 50, 60, maybe 70, depending on how we do on the back end of profit in there. But again, it's a reasonably comfortable profit because I've got the spread between, what I have into it. Mm-hmm. And then what I expect it to sell for, minus out the selling cost. So that's not a deal I would walk away from, because it's not every day, you know, I don't, you know, walk over, you know, 60 grand, you know, walking down the street every day. It's a good amount of money for, you know, about a 6 month flip.
And again, this is imperative that people understand this, because you're doing this and you're sharing this information. Thank you so much for sharing it with our audience here at Market Overdrive. And again, I want to plug it. I mean, you have to log on and follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and marketoverdrive.com. But who is going to sit here and tell you their numbers, right? This is important because people want to flip. They see it on HGTV and they want to do it all the time, but they don't understand the numbers. And you were talking about comfort, Nick, and I think it's just risk assessment, right? Because we looked at location, amount of investment. And these are things that are important because, you know, like you know your numbers. But if you are not a realtor, you're looking at the third-party websites like Zillow and tax records to assess this information. Well, that's a weakness. You're already losing leverage into a successful flip if you don't align yourself with the experts.
I'm very comfortable floating around in the, let's just call it the average price point here in Illinois. Somewhere around the $250,000 to $350,000 range for a single family home.
I like how you like to say average. I mean, it's by neighborhood.
Illinois is the state I just referenced.
Okay, the average overall is $250,000.
I don't know why we're going to do this. Okay, this is going to be a long conversation over nothing. The average price point, and if you want, I can pull it up for you after the break, of Illinois is around $250,000 to $350,000.
You don't understand how long our conversations end up after our shows because we have continue to argue these things.
The average in Gold Coast, where we're at, is a substantially higher number. Let's go back to single-family homes throughout the average suburbs, right? So, to me, those are comfortable areas to work in because I know what's going to happen quick and it's going to be relatively easy to meet the demands of the neighborhoods. But just last week, I actually called you about a property on the far north side, and it looked great.
That's what I was talking
to
you
about. The
whole
property looked, is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, okay. Baldwin Woods.
It's
not
some
Lincoln
point,
Square.
At some point, I didn't know what it was. At some point, the deal looked good at first. There's an opportunity to buy a
property. You walked away from that?
At 400. Well, when I got deeper into what it's going to really cost to construct it.
Sorry, guys. Inside scoop. But could you have called Carla?
The back of the house was falling apart. It needed a whole rear to it. I mean, trust me. I'm like, this thing might go to $300,000, $400,000. And now I'm working at an acquisition cost of $360,000, $370,000, somewhere around there. Another $300,000, $400,000 into the improvements. Now, granted, this the house next door sold for $850,000, but I'm already at this high seven number, and I haven't really opened things up yet. And now, Vince, maybe you, someone like you that have done a lot of these things says, well, there's still a good spread there of $100,000.
That's getting tight up in that range.
In my opinion, it is. I just started to get uncomfortable because, one, it is a hike from where I live to go there every day, exhaust some of my everyday time. Because I'm assuming everybody listening wants to do flipping as a side or at least to get started right now. I mean, the true developers don't really need to be listening to the show and get educated. They do this every day as well. But for me, I started looking at going in $700,000 to make a possible $100,000 to $150,000, and I got nervous. It's far away. It's a lot of
money.
And
this is where he and I didn't agree.
I just wasn't comfortable. I mean, could I have succeeded? Would it have probably worked? I think the probability is yes, I would have made it all happen. But I wasn't comfortable with the deal. And that's kind of where I go back to like my viewpoint, because I just had one come up. I have two other ones going on as we speak. Completely comfortable.
See, and this is where you and I were. It wasn't that we disagreed, but it was more of like offering options, right? If you look at a property, he was looking at multi-unit, and Nick said, I'm going to convert it into a single family because that's what's trending in that neighborhood. And I said, do you know how many people want two flats? And if it's in close proximity to public transportation, then you could still sell it as a two flat, duplex up, duplex down. So
but the highest comp was a single family.
It was.
It was. Did the highest comp was a single family.
But the problem is that in that area, also you have to look into that area. There's nothing changing.
There was no $800,000 two-flex.
It's not a
there.
Transient neighborhood, so you would be creating the market.
Okay, I'm going to say this one last time. The back of the house was falling off.
I don't care. I get
it needs
so excited.
A whole new
I
restructure
want
in the back of the house. It wasn't a joke.
Okay,
I mean,
it wasn't
paint and carpet and tile.
But here,
it was a serious project.
Oh, my gosh. Do you honestly think all I do is lipstick surgery?
No, but I'm just telling you, it was going to be a big project. But move on from that.
So I was going to say, Nick, just take your deal right there for an example. So you were getting up into the low 700s, and you were thinking your sell price might be around, you know, 850, right? So now, once you take off your, you know, 9-10% on your holding cost, now you're all the way down to 775. So now you're around 8%. So 8% of the sell price. So when I say my margins, you know, I like to keep on the low end around the 12% of the sell price. comfortably 15 to 18. So you dip below that. So your natural instincts, your gut was talking to you there and said, well, wait a minute, this is getting too tight. I'm not comfortable. It's a little bit too far away from me. And that was just your instinct starting to talk to you, tell you that, yeah, this one's feeling a little tight, a little too risky. And the next time you see that deal, you're going to walk away from it.
I completely agree.
Can you clarify something for me,
yeah,
a layperson? Carla had mentioned HGTV. HGTV does something very unrealistic. They do not figure labor costs into rehab costs.
Yeah,
it's bad for TV.
They talk about it, but
right,
it doesn't sell TV. You know,
exactly.
So,
and it's overwhelming.
Right. And I do think a lot of, I think there's two types of flippers. The ones that do some of the labor themselves and those that go into it strictly as an investment.
Or the crazy ones that do it because they love properties and they want to rehab it and they want to get their hands dirty.
And they want to manage.
And I don't mean
right.
to, you know, I'm being silly here, but I don't advocate, you know, getting so excited about something that you're going to want to make it work. I'm just teasing Nick because I like to give him a hard time. But at the end of the day, you have to be a conservative investor. You have to know your numbers, 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 numbers. And I think I say that all the time, understanding the analytics. Why are you smiling?
The property's available if you want to go buy it, knock it out, big
so,
shot.
Vince and Nick, you are talking strictly as your tool is the pencil and the phone, and you're hiring subcontractors, and you're not doing
I think,
when you're talking about these margins.
I'm not swinging a hammer.
Okay.
I'm not
going to
hammer.
All right.
Yeah, and I think
does
the
it
first,
look like Pretty Boy's going to nail anything?
Well, you know,
yeah,
like,
I can lay down some serious tile.
Would ruin the manicure.
Just so you know.
But, yeah. I doubt that,
I'm
but
gonna,
okay.
You know, I'm going to close this out here for a second, but I just wanted to kind of reference that the first part of this show was really kind of getting you a general idea of how we kind of look at things from an overview perspective. I think when we come back from a break, let's get to some do's and don'ts. What do you absolutely need physically, if you will, to go and do this, accrue and all that other fun stuff. So we'll get into all the specifics when we come back from a break. You're listening to Market Overdrive on WGNRadio.com. And of course, you're going to be able to stream us live coming up here soon at marketoverdrive.com or follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/marketoverdrive. We'll be back in a couple of, well, we'll be back shortly. I don't know if it's a couple minutes or a minute, but we'll be right here in about a minute.
Welcome back to another segment of Market Overdrive. We are here. We hang out here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. It is so impossible to do my job when you're around.
Oh, do you want me to take a day off? I will gladly take next week off.
You know, you keep threatening me with that. Just do it. Take it off. Take a whole month, a whole year. Take it off.
There it is. We heard I have permission to take off a whole year.
I will kill you.
Ladies
I will
and gentlemen,
find you.
This will be my last show until 2018.
I will find you. You know, don't do that. You're so annoying. You just, he wants validation.
I'm not looking for any validation. I'm just looking to make your life a miserable living heck.
Let's get back to
flipping
in 2017 and why you're watching us while instead of being at work and getting things done. We're hoping that you're watching us while you're at work and tuning in and sharing our information with your friends. Again, don't keep us a secret. There's tons of information here that you're hearing it from. I mean, Vince Melito, how many flips did you do last year?
Last year I did only two. This year, I'm sorry. Last year I had four projects going on, most of them actually at the same time. One of them is actually going to get sold out this year.
I mean, and sometimes it just takes time, and that's why you want to make sure that you know the timeline, right? How to structure these deals, because they're not like a conventional sale or purchase. It's a complete strategy. I mean, you have to be organized. You have to understand the numbers.
And that's what we're about to do. I think what we should do is we kind of gave it, like I said in the last break, we gave a general scope, an idea, and a conceptual platform of what flipping's like and what we look into or what we look for. But I think our people listening need to kind of have a step-by-step process, if you will, Vince.
Yep.
So we've all flipped some properties in this room, but I'm going to start with step number one. Let's go with you because you've clearly done more. What would be the first step in – let's just call it a five-step process, if you will. It could be four steps or six steps at the end of this conversation. But what things – where should we start if we want to get into flipping?
Well, you need to make sure you have your money in place. So now, you know, you've identified the process. You want to make sure you have a lender, or maybe it's a hard money guy, or maybe it's just an investor partner, and you want to make sure you have the money in place. And I know that this something is kind of falls into your arena mm-hmm. of something that you know very well. What have you done in the past to either finance or arrange for or funding on a flip?
I personally, I would have In my opinion here, I would have two different sources and for two different scenarios that could come up in your situation. If you find the right property, and what I mean by that is two different money streams. There's not at one lender is the perfect lender for every project across the board. So, for example, if you contact my company, iLoan, and you're looking to be a rehabber, we're not the lender you go to if you're trying to get in and out of a deal within like a 4-month span. We actually don't want that loan. We're not in the business of doing very, very short-term loans. We're the lender that at least 6 months would be optimal for us. We understand you can't keep a house forever. But there is other lenders that are ready that do want something less than 6 months, and they want to lend to you for a very short period of time. So, number one, have both of them lined up. Or there's nothing wrong with what we call either a crowdfunding, or you have friends with a lot of money that are willing to invest, and you could pay them a return on their investment.
What did that down again? Because you just used a term that's only industry specific, right? Crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding is where you would, let's just create a small little crowd right here. But I come to everybody in this room, and we have three people on the air, two people assisting us with our social media. So we have five people in this room, right? Even in the back studio, there's another four people.
You guys can join
the team. Let's grab all nine of everybody
empty
here.
Empty your purses.
And Nick needs $250,000 or a ballpark of $250,000 to $300,000 to know that he's got on standby for the next project he does. So if I have $30,000 from each one of you as a crowd, that would get me to that $270,000, roughly $300,000 range. So that's what we would consider a crowd of people. That's what crowdfunding. Now, there's sites that do this as well. You can go to, and it could be 100 different investors looking for a certain return. But I'm not here to plug a bunch of websites. I'm just giving you an example of a crowd of funds, or it could be one friend with deep pockets that wants to make a return on his investment, and he's ready to go. But if you're going to go to institutional financing, you're going to go to a longer-term project. Let's face it, Vince, I'm sure you've gone into some projects that you're like, this is going to take a bare minimum of 6 to 7 months. It probably won't be ready for a year from now, for whatever reason that is. That you can go to a traditional lender and get your 4% interest rates, if you will, and that's perfectly fine with them.
And are we allowed to talk about the hard money lenders?
We're about to right now.
Oh, okay.
But you're going to somebody where, you know, you want to do it on your own. You don't want to go to your friends. You don't want to go crowdfunding. You just want to have a good relationship with a short-term hard money lender or a renovation. We call them a renovation lender. They're typically more expensive, but they're expecting you to be done usually within 6 months. They'll give you extensions and all that fun stuff, but they don't like being in a deal very, very long. So those are the three sources I would have lined up. I highly recommend you look into all three of those because every project has a different appetite of lending. Don't think you have one guy that's going to do it one way and that's it. There might be a situation where certain properties are you're fighting for it with a cash offer. And institutional financing might be too long of a road in order for you to win the bid. You got to say you can close it in 10 days and blah, blah, blah. And you might need to have that personal pocket lined up. So those are your three funding sources.
So you got
to
have these people lined up because you never know how it's going to affect your negotiations and acquisition as well. That could affect it. You said lender, right? This conventional lender like iLoan. And then the crowdfunder and then hard money lenders. Those are the options.
And
rich cousin.
So step one would be get your financing lined up.
Right.
At least with some possible scenarios. Get a feeler for what your lenders are going to require. Some of them are going to require bigger down payments. Some of them might not. I don't know. You're going to have to find that out and make sure that your crowdfunding or your friends or whoever is going to be an investor, if that's the route you're going, truly has it available and truly is ready to do this.
Right. You want to have proof of funds available
Have the terminology and the structure of your financing instrument lined up. Be prepared so that when you need to pull the trigger, you can do it fast. So we got number one out of the way.
What's
step
next?
Two, I'm saying buy a property. Actually make the transaction happen, scouting. What do you feel about that?
Yeah. So we covered on the first segment kind of the acquisition part of it. Mm-hmm. You've got to make sure you have identified, you know, a property that you want using some of the ways that we had suggested earlier.
Sure.
Well, the way I see it, and I know you guys are going through this timeline, but I want to look at it from like being a company, right? You want to structure a team. You want to your timeline should be about how do you set up a company? You want to have, you know, your financing department ready. You want to have your realtor team ready, and you want to have your general contractor team ready. And before you even start that, you need a name. What are you going to call this company? Don't you set up an LLC or a trust? I mean, how do you start that process?
That's a good point. We didn't even touch that.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need to worry about that when you become a little more prolific at it. Your first, don't worry about all the LLCs. People get all excited. They start their LLC. They're spending money. They're hiring an attorney. They're filing
they never
with the
bought
state.
A property.
Yeah, first of all, you've got to find your property. You've identified it using some of the ways that we suggested in the first segment. You got to make sure you have your lender in place. And then, I would say then the step after that is to make sure you have a good contractor in place. Okay. And I want to talk about how you identify a good contractor, because you can find a contractor anywhere.
And that's very important. I think the key to any flip is not just the financing, the contractor, but and your realtor. But I think contractor especially, because, I'm not very well versed in that. And I think for me, that's a key.
I think it's one of the absolutely most important parts of the deal. Because
I say it's number one.
I mean,
it's the most
important. You have a bad contractor, boy, you can get yourself in some serious trouble really quick. Or, if he
give me a nightmare. Scare everybody. How you tell your kids, don't touch that stove because it's hot, and they touch it anyway? This is going to be one of those moments. Vince, tell them.
There's a couple ways they can get you in trouble. It's either a guy who's he shows up in a nice shirt and nice shoes, and he's hiring guys who aren't that qualified because he's trying to make, a bigger spread on his own, and now you've got a house that's not getting done the right way, and maybe you run in trouble with your inspection or something like that, or he's just eating up your profit.
Yeah.
You've
got to shop it around. I think, Nick, I called you earlier because I'm helping a client do a flip as well. And I'm like, these numbers are ridiculous. You want to keep that cost low, but you have to understand the dynamics. And I think you said, fine, start with the name, LLC, estate, whatever, or trust, whatever. Forget about that. But the legs of the transaction is financing, realtor, and contractor. Contractor is key. Make sure your contract gives you a bid on the project. And obviously, you're going to use that in your formula, which you're then going to go back and sell it to your investors who are going to finance this deal.
I'm in the middle of a deal right now where the contractor completely screwed up my deal. I mean, I'm still going to be okay
How?
At the end of it all, but I wanted to try somebody new out because he looked like he had a good, solid team. He talked a hell of a talk, put together a pretty aggressive bid. But at the end of the day, he just went rogue. I'll be honest with you. I mean, he went rogue not only with his numbers weren't lining up with the promises on the piece of paper. He wasn't taking the proper channels with permitting. I mean, the demolition was done right. We received that permit, but then it was.
And you're in a town that you cannot get away with not getting permits.
Even the most experienced people could run into a bad person. This guy looked good. I seen some of the work he had done, but I think he threw in a soft bid to win the job. And then all of a sudden, he was trying to change the overall scope and the overall cost. It's like, well, wait a minute. You got the job now, and now this thing's mushrooming, and we haven't even made any changes. And so you didn't bid yourself appropriately. So that was a bad test.
And then they stopped showing up. If you don't immediately adjust, your price upwards on the budget they promised.
He didn't have to worry about showing up. I knew when something. I've been doing this long enough. When something stinks, it stinks. You got to go. And I went back to my old crews. He underbid my old crews. And so I'm like, well, look, this is a money game, and I'm going to take a shot.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out. He wasn't what he was, he was promised to be, and that it happens even to people with experience. Luckily, I knew when something was off, and I still had time to adjust. But I would say, personally, that's going to cost me about $10,000 in this whole mess, scheme of things.
That's the staging budget. I'm just kidding. that's my budget.
It's just profit.
It's profit,
I lost $10,000 by using a fool.
Is there a way to protect yourself? Contractually,
You have contracts. You could sue. You can go into all that stuff. But then you got to make business decisions about how much do you want to spend suing him. If he looted me for $150,000, we'd have a hell of a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. If he was off by a few thousand dollars, I don't know if I have the time or aggravation to go through an attorney and file that. And spend the money to go after the same amount of money.
It's important to note as well, Nick, that even though you're saying hire a contractor, and they're considered the general contractor, you're still overseeing every aspect of the transaction. You were able to see that there was a shift in relationships and what he was delivering to you because you were on top of the transaction.
It wasn't my first rodeo. But again, it goes back to the word comfortable. If something's going on and it's not making sense, or you feel like you're being lied to from your GC, or you feel like this isn't taking shape the way it was told.
We're tapping into your inner gut feeling.
It turns into a comfort level.
Told you it was going to be a Valentine's Day show after all.
but that the crew is so important. So, I guess what we're saying here is, number one, if you have just a general contractor that's going to do this for you, try and stick with somebody you're constantly comfortable with or somebody you could trust their work. Patty mentioned earlier, there's some people that are great framers. great electricians. They do. They're kind of like handyman, jacks of all trades. They could probably get away with saving some money, and they would just need a plumber to help them finish a project off, or a tile setter to help finish off a project, or whatever it might be that you know that they don't specialize in. But have your people lined up.
Or just do what I do, work with family, because I can yell at my brother all the time. What were
not
you thinking?
Not everybody has a brother.
You guys can call my brother.
I like my contractors to be guys who are active participants in the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, the key guy when you're looking for a contractor is the carpenter. A lot of times a carpenter is also the GC, so he maybe can bring an electrician or a plumber to the table for you. Otherwise, you find your own electrician and your own plumber so that there's not another 12, 15% being added into the cost of those things. But that's what I look for, and the carpenter is the probably the biggest piece mm-hmm. of the contracting puzzle that you want to make sure you've got right. You know, if it's just a guy who's going to then turn around and hire a carpenter, you know, again, these rehabs become very tight with your margin. So you really need to make sure you're getting the right guys in there and, you know, and then making sure you've got some good referrals from them and checking out their old work. Because as Nick was just saying, you can find someone, it can look good, and it's all in a pretty package and the work looks okay, and then it still goes south. So yeah. There's a lot of risk involved in who you're picking to do this work.
Absolutely.
Gentlemen, in this part of the timeline, at which point do you bring in a realtor? I mean,
well,
you guys are experts because we
had them in the beginning. You can call it step one or step two, technically. I think a realtor and a loan officer, just like with any other purchase, are pretty simultaneous decisions. You should know that you're approved or you know you have your financing lined up. And, of course, someone's going to help you find this property and the agent. So whether you want to start with one and two, whatever's, you know, I don't really see a huge difference in it.
Well, the only reason I ask is because a lot of flipping or investors who are flipping now are calling me once the property's already been fixed or rehabbed. And I'm walking in there like, why did you do this kitchen this way? Why did you?
I agree,
I think that
Carla.
Should be the same realtor,
I
personally.
Agree.
Yeah, I think that should be just, Vince, correct me if I'm wrong, it should be the same
right
person.
The
whoever helped you with it should be able to tell you what they think it's worth if you did it a certain way.
I agree. And, yeah. And here's the thing, because Nick and I keep talking because we're both experts in that early stages. You know, Nick is a loan officer and me with the real estate background. We're already armed with that knowledge and we know these areas. However, for our audience, for the people who are looking to do this, you better have a realtor who really knows their stuff very early and helping you with the acquisition all the way back to the beginning stage of the acquisition. So in many ways, maybe you put the realtor all the way to the very front of the deal.
Right.
Because if you're not the expert of the area and what it can sell for and how some of the things that get integrated and what it's going to go for on the back end, you better have that person with you right from the beginning.
And even if you're using those third-party websites like a Hubzoo or an auction.com, those are still websites where you can bring in a realtor but also give you the analytics, right? Don't use Trulia. Don't use Zillow. Don't use third-party websites for acquisition costs.
And if you didn't, I would hurry up and contact the realtor about the end game. What do you think? I just bought this property on auction.com for $75,000.
Yeah.
What do you think I could sell this if I really did it all the way to the nines and it was a perfect home?
And what does the nines mean? What does that entail?
Completely gutted. You know, new electrical, new plumbing, new HVAC, like it's completely redone. What could this house sell for? Let that person tell you, and then I would actually hire that person because it's like, okay, you said you could sell this house at 250. You're going to get this house at 250.
I met with four people
I'd like to
last
put
week.
That same realtor that bought me, like let's say I didn't use an auction.com or a HUD.com or something like this, and Vince Melito found me the property. He says, Nick, this is a great one. It's only $65,000, but if you put a good 80 into it, you could sell it for $225,000. Okay, Vince. Aside from the fact that you found the deal for me and common courtesy would have Vince relist it and resell it for me, I also like the fact that I can put him on his own words. Hey, you told me this was a good idea, and you said that it was an easy $225,000 sale. I got your product the way you want it.
Right.
Here it is. Go sell it for $225,000. I think that keeps everybody honest and, again, puts you back to being comfortable. I would highly discourage people to use one agent to buy the property, the subject property, and another different agent to sell it. I personally wouldn't do that.
And you got
to
reward the agent, too. So the agent who's hustling for you on the front end, you got to reward him with the deal on the back
Absolutely.
End. That's part of the loyalty of the deal.
But they need you also with what could happen later. You have to use their own words against them if you're this person that is not in the industry.
I agree with you.
If you come to me and tell me, buy this thing today, you can easily sell it for $300,000, I need to hold you accountable.
Right. And I love that you're saying, I want to reward you. I want to thank you for helping me hustle at the front end. At the end of the day, you know, it's customer service. That's what you expect from your, that's what you expect from your realtor, is that customer service. When I work with someone from the inception to the end, I'm giving them acquisition costs. I'm giving them recommendations on what they can and cannot do in that kitchen, what colors to pick. And it's really hard. Even for myself, I'm looking, I called you, Nick, and said, hey, I got three colors for this kitchen in this specific neighborhood. What do you think it's going to sell more? Or fastest, is it going to be this dark one, this white one, or this in-between color? And you'd be surprised. I mean, I call Patty all the time because, you know, she is the stager. She is going to tell me paint colors. You're going to tell me, you know, what do I do with this kitchen? Do I open it up or do I keep it enclosed?
Right. But the realtor also, though, is such a great resource for an investor because it's the realtor that knows the neighborhood. It's the realtor that knows what is an overinvestment and what is an appropriate must-do investment. You don't want to over-improve a property. It's just money down the drain. But you do need to get certain boxes checked off for it to be a desirable property in that area.
And from acquisition, you're already negotiating. You're strategically, you're deciding how you're going to market this property, what you're going to do, who's going to be that buyer. Is it going to be a first-time buyer? Is it going to be a step-up buyer? And so once you understand who that target audience is, that that marketing specialist is going to be able to guide you through the finishes of the property, but also the negotiations of the property. Yeah.
Right. Let me go back to that property we mentioned earlier where I didn't feel comfortable.
Well, you didn't want to bring me on the deal?
Well, hold on a second. You're more than welcome to have it all to yourself, hon. It's all you.
I love how he gives it to me because he knows it sucks.
The importance of having people and a team around you, which is kind of the body of the skeleton of this whole conversation, really. We had the realtor.
Creating the company.
The realtor you had that picked out the house, found the house, the financing person that you have that's going to line you up with the funds for the house, the GC you have, which is number three, for the cost of construction. And then we're going to end up back at staging and closeout and marketing here in a minute. But one of the people that actually protected me from doing that deal wasn't just me not feeling comfortable. It was I use a short-term lender, like a rehab lender, to do that project. And he luckily had done several in that area. And I showed him what I was looking to finish up and get to. And he said that all three of them have been well over $300 in construction costs. So he goes, just so you know.
After you said,
I already had that feeling in my stomach that this is going to go north of $250. And I said, I think I'm going to get it knocked out for $250, $300. He goes, I've had two, hit close to four, and I had another one that was in the mid-threes. So be prepared. If you're good with it, you're approved, but it might not be as high of a margin that you feel good with. And he actually helped me walk off the ledge. Number one, it's his money, too. He's putting it on the line to invest in me, or his lender is. But it's so important that all these people are involved. Sometimes you might want to take your GC whoever's going to do the work with you. Just maybe you're in the contract phase, but you still find out you need to walk away, even if it costs losing your earnest money, because your GC is like, hey, man, this is not a $40,000 job. This is going to go farther than that. And you might need that person to prevent you from making a big mistake. So all these people, most lenders will walk away from a deal if they don't think it's going to appraise or your end goal is not going to come out to where it comes regardless. But now you have a realtor protecting you. You have a lender protecting you. You have
it's
a general contractor protecting you. That's why it's so important to pick all these three people in these three steps out.
Your CEO, your VP, you always have to have that structure, though. Right. And I think that you have to, again, I keep saying that on the show, align yourself with an expert that's going to help you. And I don't know if we want to get into this, Nick, but assignable flip, like you had mentioned, you know, I don't even have to touch it and I could still make some money.
That's wholesaling and all that stuff. That's probably
right.
A different
but
show.
It's still Let's an option, right? If you don't want, we're not going to complicate it today, but, you know, there's always that other option. And when I said talk to a realtor, you know, when you and I were powwowing, if you want to say, you said, I'm going to turn this two flat into a single family. And I said, no, leave it as a two flat because the market demands that. There is a lack of inventory for that product. And then you talked about, well, what if I just sell it? I'm just going to, you know, buy it and sell it again. So there's different options.
I'm happy to sell it to you.
No, I don't want to buy
you
it.
Just tell me
you make
want
me
it.
So sick.
That's fine.
You know, if you already juiced it out and it doesn't have anything left.
I haven't done anything to it. So it's still sitting there.
I still
want
to look into it, but I'm intrigued.
Let's get on to the fourth step. We're coming to a close. Construction's gone well, hopefully. We're on our timelines, and we see ourselves a few weeks out before it's ready for to go on the market. What do we do next?
Who wants to jump in there?
Patty. There you go.
You got to bring the stager. you got to sell the lifestyle, right? And I think strategically, and I keep saying strategy, strategy, strategy. I had, we just put a property in Berwyn this week, and they flipped it. And I wrote in the agent remarks, willing to give closing cost credits to the next buyer and also FHA okay. Why? Because this is a target audience where it's a first-time buyer and someone who's going to, you know, possibly be using these type of products. And what do they want? They've never bought before. If you're a first-time buyer, you can't envision yourself in that space. So you need to bring somebody who's going to create that lifestyle for you. That's why you bring in a stager who's going to create, you know, set up that kitchen, that bathroom, that master bedroom.
As an investor, you want zero emotion, but when you go to market that property, you want to bring in the
love
emotion
it, Patty knows
again,
how to read
and
that.
Not, so not when, your own emotion, when, the buyer's emotion.
When do we bring you in? Like, when is the optimal time? We don't need to bring you in the day we bought the property.
No, absolutely
right.
not.
Okay.
But things like colors,
kitchen selections, yeah.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But then also, so is the realtor. Mm-hmm. If it's a savvy realtor for those larger choices, the bigger investments, I would also have a realtor on board
yeah.
who can tell you, you know, in this neighborhood, you definitely want the wolf oven, for example, or, you know, there's no point.
Or decorative items, like I know that I've called
decorative items, right.
Yeah. What do we do?
Absolutely.
A lot of people are doing solid colors for their doors nowadays or doing that really solid gray. And, you know, in some neighborhoods, it may not pan out very well.
In some neighborhoods, it's not needed.
A lot of people are getting trendy and chic with their barn doors. And in some neighborhoods, that may not trend well as well. So, I mean, you want to bring in a stager that's going to tell you, okay, these are the trends. These are the decorating state, you know, trends. But you got to bring in a realtor that's going to say, that may be too specific. You're customizing it, and you want to bring it as, you know, keep it as vanilla as possible, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fine line. It's a very fine line because the property, you want it to have personality, but you sort of want it to have your ideal buyer's personality.
You want it
and
to fit a marketplace. Who are you trying to sell this
exactly.
house to?
Exactly.
Understand who your target audience. And again,
exactly.
it goes back to the whole concept of being in a company, right? You want to have your marketing team that's going to give you information about who that buyer is. And one of the biggest thing that I want to give out there, and this is a huge secret, it's more of like the negotiations aspect, which this is what's going to keep the whole deal together. This is what's going to allow you to reach that profitability margin. And that's how you negotiate your deals. I want to advise you if you're looking to flip or any, you know, any deal whatsoever. Two of the things that you should always request when you're negotiating a deal is, I know realtors are going to get upset at me if I say this, but demand that your preferred lender also, you know, goes through that approval. You know, if somebody comes in and you have five offers, which I just had last week, I made sure that my preferred lender review that approval because you want to make sure that the, you know, that you look at proof of funds for the deposit. You want to make sure that that pre-approval is in fact a pre-approval because if you trust this lender, they're going to look and review that buyer's information and make sure that it's going to go to closing. So again, you have to create leverage for yourself. Put yourself in a situation where you're going to have multiple bidding wars. Why are you looking at me like that? Why are you making that face?
I just think we stepped over a few things. That's
no,
all.
We didn't. I'm just telling you, negotiations, it's part of the realtor. That's our job. That's what we do.
It sounded like you were going down the right path with something, but then it kind of sounds like we stepped to the final point.
No, it's not.
I liked when you were saying you got to negotiate. I think that one thing we didn't mention here is if we could leave one floating tip in this whole thing, is the whole process. I remember one businessman said to me a long, long time ago, negotiate everything at all times during business because everything, every little penny will add up eventually. So, you know, negotiate the price of the acquisition. Carla hit that on the head. Negotiate your contractor. Got to do it. Negotiate with your lender. You're using a renovation loan. They want to charge 4 points to do the loan. Try and get it down to at least two. I mean, they're typically not free loans, but whatever. Every dollar throughout this whole process is the goal of coming out to a net profit at the end of it. So negotiation is very, very key. Negotiate the stager. You're going to have to talk to them. How much is it going to charge?
Can't negotiate my stager.
We're going to have to.
She's the key to success.
It's all.
You're
I'm sure
not
you get plenty of
negotiate.
I'm sure you
it's
get plenty
part of
people.
Profit margins.
You get plenty of people negotiating your services. It's just life. But if you don't negotiate every step of the way, then you're just actually leaving more and more dollars
so
along the way.
How did I get ahead of myself with the negotiations with the buyer?
Well, we're selling the property already.
Oh,
we're not there
I
yet.
I get so excited.
I
know, wanted to sit to that point.
You sold the property.
I already sold it.
Yeah,
I already
no.
told you how to sell it.
No.
I got one more secret, though.
No. Okay, well, let's get to that step before we get to selling the property.
No, I will wait after break.
There is no break.
Oh, no, there's no break.
When we break, we're breaking for 7 days.
Okay, so we're ending. Okay, the last one is non-refundable earnest deposit. Because obviously, especially for those of you who are financing this deal.
We're selling the house now, right? Because we fixed it up.
You fixed it. You're selling it. You brought the stager. And you got Carla Mina, negotiator extraordinaire, telling you how to do this. Stop it. Anyway, you can't agree. You don't agree with having someone confirm the approval?
Do it. Oh, no. When it's for sale now.
Yeah, the house is for sale.
That it's for sale
yeah,
now.
But
okay.
The house is for sale. You don't agree with some.
List the house. All right. There we have it. The next step is to actually put the house on the market.
I get it now. I skipped the listing, the house, the marketing. All right. I already told you. Fine. We've already done our job. We priced it right. So it was on the market for 3 days. We got multiple offers. How do you negotiate it with the buyer, right? Make sure that you confirm the approval and that you also, after someone's done their home inspection, that they give you a non-refundable deposit. Because if they can't get that loan done, at least that covers the cost of you paying that interest rate. Right? Do you agree? Disagree?
Mm-hmm.
Great idea?
Yeah.
Don't use it. Make sure you use it on your flip.
Okay.
Oh, God, you guys. All right, close it out, I guess. We'll see you in 7 days.
I'm going to let our guests close it out today. Patty, you want to throw something in there, and Vince as well?
Well, in addition to, there's a number of professionals you want to have on board if you're an investor at the tail end of it. Housekeeping service. Truly, you want to get a housekeeping service that is familiar with taking care of a house, a post-construction house, because there are different needs. And getting it staged, for sure. It's so little money compared to so many of the other improvements that you'd make that it's marketing dollars well spent.
Vince? So. How do you want to wrap it up?
Just wrap it up with a final thought is, you know, as you're looking to get into this process, just make sure you think of the steps that we're giving you here today and then you apply them. Number one, most important, is make sure you're buying the home properly. Acquisition cost. Line yourself up with a good lender. Make sure you have a phenomenal contractor because he's the one who's going to hold your budget in check. If you blow your acquisition and you blow your budget, then you're pretty much going to lose money on the deal.
You're just blowing up.
All right. So there's a few steps in here, but, you know, if we're going to put an emphasis on all of them are equally important, but you've got to buy it right, and then you've got to make sure you don't over-improve it or build it out more than what the market will bear. So budget and acquisition price, let those two major points, you know, sit in your head as being extremely important. That's the easiest way for you to lose money on a deal you're trying to make money on.
Love it. And it's exciting. As you said, Nick, this is the year to sell, sell, sell.
I'm totally
it's a great opportunity to sell. If you want to get into the flipping business, I encourage everyone to do it. I mean, it's really exciting.
I'm going to wrap it up with one word. Comfortable.
Oh,
be
gosh.
Comfortable.
Leverage.
I mean, all the stuff that we gave you is very important information and how to do this the correct way and the things you're going to definitely need. There might be some things you might want to add on. There might be some things that you might be able to do on your own. That's great for you. But at the end of the day, if you're not comfortable in doing this whole process, you are going to always be walking on eggshells all the way till it's completed and it's sold. And then you might even regret for even wasting your time. With that being said, I want to thank everyone in the studio today, Patty Mamoni and Stagey Windy City, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Vince Melito.
Thank you.
Carla, I'm going to try and thank you somehow, some way here. I guess. Thank you.
You're welcome. Who do you call when you need advice?
I just call you when I need something ridiculous. You've been listening to Market Overdrive. Hopefully you've learned quite a bit today about flipping. You could obviously look us up, subscribe to our podcast at WGNradio.com, and also subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Run all that fun stuff. We'll be back here at 10 a.m. next Wednesday, live for you again. And hope you have a good week. And see you next week.